I see more than a few people suck in their breath at the price. No shit. It's expensive. It's Jason, on the video conference line, who asks the obvious question. Why do we need to know? If we kill them all and keep them contained in the dungeon, won't that be enough? Even if the dungeon is creating the spores? Veer leans forward in his chair.
No. Infected dungeons are unusual, but they are not unique. An infected dungeon cannot be contained by just killing the creatures within. Eventually, the infection will spread. There are galactic procedures to contain such dungeons, but they are expensive and require significant time investment. John is correct. Understanding what we face is important.
I nod to Veer before looking at the group to see if there are any further questions. When there aren't, I add, Lastly, we're going to have to clear that dungeon one way or the other. Like any dungeon, if we don't clear it regularly, it'll overpopulate and spill out. With an overmind, that might happen sooner than we'd like, since there's no infighting. We've got a week before the spores feel the effects of the virus, and it'll take a couple of days before it really gets going. 10 days, right, Leonard? On confirmation, I continue. 10 days, then we go in. I watch as people grimly accept the deadline, slowly running the numbers through their mind. Jim frowns, staring into space before he looks back at me, his voice husky from too many cigarettes.
I'll get a few hunting groups to the dungeon. We can't contribute much to the attack, not and keep the city safe. But my group and another could help man the area.
That'll be great, Jim, Lana says, nodding for him to head out. He gets up, offering a brief nod to everyone before he leaves to brief his people. I almost say something before I decide against it. Jim understands probably better than any of us how strong his hunting group really is. In the assault, they just won't be that much help.
We're in, of course, Richard says. We've got a couple of credits saved up we can add to the pot.
Veer raises a hand, cutting Richard off.
The purchase will be handled by Lord Roxley.
I nod, grateful for that help. I don't know how deep his pockets are, though I've gotten the feeling that they're not as deep as he'd like us to believe. Still, I'll take Veer's word for it. Thanks. Veer nods before looking at the ceiling.
While Lord Roxley is unable to arrive in time for the attack, I believe his guard may contribute a few additional men to the attack. I shall lead them myself.
Capstan speaks next, his voice a low rumble.
The Yerrick can send 3 adventuring parties.
I'll speak with Zev to see what it can contribute, but I can outfit a lot of people with potions.
Sally pipes up, her normally cheerful demeanor extremely serious now. I watch this play out, and a part of me wilts at how mundane it all seems. A part of me expected orchestral music, grand speeches, and declarations of bravery. Instead, we get a boardroom with the clink of ice water and dry allocations of resources and studied consideration. On the other hand, as I look around, I have a feeling that this is a group I want to go to battle with. All but one.
So, Hillbilly, your crew coming?
Ollie floats over to Bill, hands on his knees as he sits cross-legged. Luthien snarls, and I get more than a few looks that say the same thing. Control your spirit. I ignore them.
We have warned you before, spirit,
Bill says, raising a hand toward Ali, and a part of me wonders what he's thinking he's going to do. My curiosity almost lets me watch Bill hurt Ali, but that won't get the answer I want.
Ali, enough. Be quiet now.
Ali shoots me the most horrified, betrayed look ever until I add, because Bill is about to answer your question. Luthien turns to look at Bill, her lips parting slightly as she waits to see what he has to say. Bill opens his mouth, then glances around the suddenly quiet room before shutting it again.
We will not. Thought so,
Ali smirks, floating back to me. I sigh, sending him a thought. Enough. Let the others handle it. You got the ball rolling.
Yeah. Knew he was trying to get out of it.
Why am I not surprised?
Lana's voice comes out frosty as she leans forward. Did the part that the spores are a threat to all of us not get through that thick skull of yours?
Yes. I also note that there's more than sufficient numbers of you to deal with it.
Bill shrugs.
I see no reason to risk myself or my people in addition.
Except if we fail, we all die, Amelia adds.
So you risk everything on a single throw of the dice, Bill says.
Die,
Ollie mutters, so softly only I hear him.
You have a better suggestion?
Richard says.
For myself? No. There's nothing to be gained by joining you or staying if you fail. My duty is to my people,
Bill says. Others begin to argue with him, all to be shut down by a light rap on the table by Veer.
Adventure across, Veer says.
Bill's jaw clenches slightly, the muscles flexing as he readies himself for another attack.
You own land in Lord Roxley's domain, Veer says. You might not know this, but that ownership comes with certain obligations, one of which I will invoke now. You will join us in the attack, or you shall be declared Mujine. I believe the closest human term is outcast.
Bill leans forward.
You can't do that. This is a free country. There is no draft here.
I believe you have repeatedly informed the Council that you are not breaking any galactic law, that you are under galactic law here in the city. As such, Canadian or the city's very own laws do not apply to you. Was that not what you said?
Veer's voice grows colder and colder with each word.
Now, do you refuse the call to arms?
Bill jerks his head as if he's trying to get rid of a nasty crick in his neck, but finally accedes to Veer's request. Lana's openly gloating, and even most of the human council members seem quite happy. Of course, nothing compares to the smirk Amelia shoots Bill, obviously glad to see him finally dealt with. The non-humans ignore the entire interaction with aplomb, though, obviously not wanting to get involved. Well, outside of Ali, who is grinning from ear to ear. I stay silent, as does Bill, who sulks in his seat, as the others plan what we need. Names are thrown out, some familiar, some less so, as additional help for the fight is debated. All the while, I remember the hundreds of Fraxen that wait for us.
We don't have enough, do we, Boyo?
Ali sends to me as he spots my face. No, not yet.
It is unusual for a spy to request to speak with me directly,
Labashi says as we sit down at my fort, the grounds nicely clear. One good thing about the system, it certainly keeps its side of the bargain. I paid for clear fields of fire and an upgraded, well-kept yard, and even through the snowfalls and monster wanderings, it's done that. I'm an unusual spy. I pour him more tea before sitting back. It's been a few days since the big meeting, and in the city, everyone is scrambling. Whether it's hunting to get more credits, training to get ready, or planning the attack, the city is buzzing. I guess certain doom is a good way to get everyone's ass into gear. Labashi sips on his newly filled cup.
This blackberry tea is quite good, as have been your reports thus far.
Glad you like it. And the reports. I'm enjoying the credits, too. I smile at him, doing my best innocent look. Not that I even know if he can tell the difference, but you do what you can. How'd you like to get information on the fighting groups? All the fighting groups, firsthand.
And how would you do that?
Labashi says, an eyebrow rising. Well, that's a funny story. I lean forward and fill him in on the last month or so. I drop all of it on him and end with our planned attack. So we're going in. All of us. Except it won't be enough, I don't think.
I know of this first fist of yours and Veer,
Labashi says, finger tapping the edge of the cup.
I believe you might be surprised.
Perhaps, I stare at my hands and shake my head, but there's likely going to be more blood lost than I'd like. So I'm here, asking to hire you.
And what do you have to offer, Mr. Lee? Our services are expensive,
Labashi adds. I nod. Yes, I figured as much. So let's talk. I lean forward, meeting his gaze. This is a bad deal, a bad negotiation. I have no leverage, no way of making this come out good for me. On the other hand, if I'm dead, it won't really matter. Hours later, I watch Labashi walk away. I shut my eyes, leaning back. The negotiation was...
Horrible! This is a bad, bad idea!
Ali finally speaks up, staring at me. Yeah, I know. I exhale, shaking my head. But it's my choice. We need the bodies. Without more help, we're screwed. And the dwarves aren't willing to help. Now come on.
There's someone else we need to speak to. Ollie grumbles but says nothing as I climb aboard Saber. I look back at the fort. Gods, I actually enjoyed my time here. Hunting, killing, being alone. No one to care about, no one to worry for. Just me and the apocalypse.
Oi! I thought you said we were going, boyo!
I snort. Yeah, enough with the maudlin nonsense. There's work to do. Aiden! I walk in as he finishes class. I've been waiting outside for the last 10 minutes, practicing my own affinity. John? Aiden replies as he puts his notes on the table and turns to stare at me. Lana tells me you turned down joining us. He nods firmly.
Yes, I'm sorry. I know you need everyone who can come. I can't.
I take a seat next to him. Because of what happened last time? He nods, fear clear in his eyes.
I don't want to die.
Few of us do. I understand. Thank you for coming out when you did. For teaching me what you can. If we don't come back, get the kids out. Head south. There might be something left back there.
What do you mean?
Aiden says. Dawson's gone, and Carcross won't last if... The mage cuts me off.
I mean, if you don't come back.
Oh, this is our final toss, I answer, lips twisting. We either win or we die. If we don't stop the spores, they'll keep growing and growing, and eventually they'll hit Whitehorse and swarm us. We have to win this. Now. He clasps his hands together, fingers shaking as I continue. So go south. If we don't come back, get everyone that you can out. Aiden nods jerkily, looking at me before looking away, unable to meet my eyes. I give his shoulder a squeeze before I walk off, stopping only when he calls my name.
How do you do it? I want to. I want to be braver, but I can't.
He whispers. You're asking the wrong person. I don't turn around as I stop in the doorway, a hand on the doorframe. From my viewpoint, you're plenty brave. He laughs bitterly, and I leave before he can recover and realize I never answered his question. I don't have an answer for him, at least not the one he's looking for. How do I tell him that it's not because I'm brave, but because I'm too fucking scared and angry to stop? How do I tell him that every time I stop and think I see Haynes Junction, or that damn village in the middle of nowhere, or Tahar? I walk outside into the sunlight and shake my head. No. I have no answer for Aiden. His reaction is the sensible one. Mine? Well, mine's certifiable.
We don't have enough people,
Jim states again, his fingers tapping the 3D map of the dungeon and the surrounding areas. We don't have a lot of the actual dungeon mapped, and all of what we do have comes from my drones, which frankly is rather worrying. A major recent change to the area is the battlements and walls now surrounding the dungeon entrance, a hastily constructed series of defenses meant to contain any incursion. It won't hold against a major push, but it's sufficient to contain the occasional Fraxen that wanders out and keep other monsters away.
Even if we take my people off the walls, I see at least a half dozen different passages there. My people can't stand up to these Fraxen,
Jim adds.
Yes, Veer answers, rubbing his chin. We might have to hit and pull back, drawing small numbers out to us.
Very dangerous work,
Capstan adds, pointing at the entrance chamber and the chamber beneath.
The Fraxen could attempt to overwhelm us at any time.
What of the virus?
Richard asks. The group shrugs. Might work, might not, I answer before sighing.
We sure the spores aren't part of the dungeon?
Richard says.
Veer answers that one for me. Yes, we confirmed that via the shop. The spores are an invasive species, not dungeon-owned. Of course, they eventually could be, but as of this time, they aren't. If we wipe the dungeon, we can always sweep it later to confirm.
Since the big meeting, a smaller group of us have been meeting more regularly, trying to work out a plan that will keep most of us alive. The group consists of Veer and Capstan, who have the most system-related battle planning experience, and Jim, who surprisingly is a former infantry sergeant in the army. Richard, Jason, and I drift into the conversation occasionally, throwing what help we can, But at the end of the day, we're civilians trying to plan a battle. We're mostly here so that we know what is going on. The problem is, we're outnumbered, and time isn't on our side. The longer we take, the more the Fraxen will increase in numbers. While our people might upgrade in levels in the meantime, the fact stands that it only takes a few level 50 Fraxen to overwhelm a single level 40 adventurer. Better weapons, better tactics, and better coordination can help tilt things in our favor, but the numbers still aren't on our side. If the Fraxen acted like normal monsters, they wouldn't swarm and cluster. We'd have a chance to fight them in smaller groups, whittling down their numbers in a series of battles. Unfortunately, the spores are sentient and have shown a willingness to swarm us and lay traps. I have a partial solution to the number problem, I say. The Hakarta have agreed to let us have 3 platoons of their men, level 40 or so each, but they'll be coming with their full loadout. Veer looks at me, startled, then his eyes narrow.
Hakarta? The same ones you fought before?
Yes.
And how did you come in contact with them that you were able to arrange a contract?
Veer asks, his voice cold. I just smile at him. His eyes narrow in suspicion until Capstan taps the table to get all our attention.
Lieutenant, it is done. I assume there is a price involved, Capstan says.
Yes. We'll need to pay them 10,000 credits per platoon for their involvement, and their share of the loot, of course, I say. People wince. Still, 30,000 credits isn't that much when you take into account a full platoon of 5 Hakarta will share it. Of course, I don't mention the favor I now owe Labashi, the one he can call in at any time. I hedge the favor to ensure that he can't make me use it against my friends or the city, but otherwise, it's pretty open-ended. That's on top of me needing to continue to feed him information, of course. Capstan nods, rubbing his chin.
With the 3 platoons, we should be able to keep the human hunters on the walls. That will give us enough men, barely, to cover the dungeon itself.
I stare at the map as Veer and Capstan hash out the details with occasional input from Jim, figuring out the best way to fit the Hakarta in our plans. All this talk, and we've basically come up with 3 major strategies, dependent on what we find inside. The first is simple. The virus reverts the Fraxen and the dungeon back to its normal state. That means scattered groups without overall coordination. This is our best-case scenario, and if it happens, we can split the team into smaller groups to clear the dungeon before we finally get to the boss. It's also the least likely option, but we do have plans for it. The second scenario is if there's no effect, or mild effects, and the spores continue to act like the way they have before. In that case, the Fraxen are likely to group together, attack in waves, and attempt ambushes. In such a scenario, the goal is to establish a beachhead in the first cavern, set up fortifications in it, and weather the attacks. That leaves us a fallback position in the tunnel, where a secondary set of fortifications will be made, then the walls. We've also mined the entrance and the ground above it, so if necessary, we can cause a landslide that will give us enough time to vacate the dungeon's vicinity. We've decided against trying to bury the dungeon entrance entirely since there's no way to know if there's another exit. Or worse, if the Fraxen are able to dig themselves out. Of course, if we do fail, Jim's men have orders to drop the entrance. As much as we'd like to know the layout of the dungeon, the cost of it in the shop is exorbitant. The third scenario is probably the most dangerous. If the spores feel truly endangered, they might pull back, forcing us to come into the dungeon after them. As Jim's already noted, even after a few caverns, there are multiple passageways and potential entrances. Some, probably most of them, will peter out in dead end. However, until we can verify that, we'll have to guard each. That means we'll have to move in slowly and carefully, checking each area. Worse, if there are multiple passageways that connect, we could be forced to split our force to cover each of those potential passages until we meet up again. Depending on how deep and where the spores decide to have their last stand, we could be extremely dispersed if we try to cover all the exits. If not, we run the risk of being flanked. It's not a great situation, and why we're all hoping it's either one of the other scenarios. In either case, Zev's hard at work putting together multiple drones and signal repeaters for us so that we can scout out areas and keep in touch. We've debated rolling in a couple of bombs and setting them off to clear the area before moving in deeper. Jim pointed out that the narrow corridors and their mana strength and nature would ensure that the blast forces were more concentrated, giving us more bang for our buck. Unfortunately, Veer and Capstan overruled him. For one thing, we have no idea how big the entire complex could be. We could be wasting credits by purchasing bombs and setting them off without hurting anything. Even if we did manage to catch some Fraxen in the explosions, if the dungeon has more than one floor, the blast wouldn't cross the floors. And of course, we just don't have the credits to buy something powerful enough to ensure that all the monsters die. It was why most times dungeons were still cleared the old-fashioned way. One floor at a time, with small parties. The night before the big day, the Nugget is hopping. I drive by on Saber and almost go in, but decide against it, stopping only long enough to visit the shop and stock up on more grenades, missiles, and projectiles. I've loaded my altered space with as much of each as I can unreasonably see myself using already, so buying more is my version of fretting. In the end, I head home. I might not need much sleep physically or mentally, but there's a calming, emotional release in the emptiness that a good night's rest can bring. I drive slowly through Riverdale, knowing that icy patches lie hidden underneath the latest dusting of snow. We need a better solution for the roads, like so many other problems, but I push it out of my mind. I have other things to deal with. At home, I find Lana and Richard seated around the dining table that's connected to the open kitchen. For once, Richard is without a female companion. Instead, the two Pearsons are chatting quietly, accompanied by a single husky each. Even then, the large dining room is crowded. Richard greets me, waving me to a chair. I take it after some maneuvering, seating myself and smacking Bella on the nose, not too gently as she tries to lick me. Licky dog. I greet the pair, looking around the kitchen. No dinner?
It's nearly 10,
Lana says, shaking her head. There's leftovers in the fridge. Huh, I nod, eyeing the blocked-off stovetop and fridge. Seeing my predicament, the pair send the dogs out the door, freeing me to cook. You guys ready? I ask.
As much as we can be,
Richard answers for them both.
I'm just glad that Leonard is certain the infected Fraxen won't be poisonous for the dogs.
Oh, I pause in heating up the stir-fried rice. I never even thought about how we'd be feeding their pets.
And you, John?
Lana asks.
This is what I do, babe.
I turn around to flash her a cocky smile and a wink. The redhead looks startled for a moment before bursting out laughing, Richard joining her.
Please, don't do that ever again, Richard says, shaking his head. It really doesn't suit you.
I snort, face collapsing as I turn back to my leftovers. They're still chuckling behind me, and I find myself smiling slightly. As I'm busy and awkwardly placed to carry on the conversation, they end up recounting stories of their shared childhood and their dad's sense of humor. Really? Putting Lana's first set of car keys in Jell-O was meant to be funny? When I'm ready, I walk back to the table with the plates of food and plop myself onto my seat before pushing a pair of plates out to them. I don't even have to ask if they'll be joining me. Putting food in front of system-enhanced fighters is a guarantee of it being consumed. As we eat, we talk, all of us avoiding the topic of our upcoming delve. Everything that needs to be said has been said or will be said. In time, Makito joins us, pointing out that our increasingly loud conversation is keeping her up before she snags a potato. For a time, we just talk and eat, worries about tomorrow pushed aside. The past is pain. The future, uncertainty. The present is all we have, and staring at my friends, it's enough. Chapter 20.
I really wish the weather would make up its mind, Richard grumbles as he stomps through the slush pile of mud and snow as we finally reach the dungeon.
Fun thing about being in the Yukon in mid-November, the temperature doesn't always stay beneath zero. So all that snow we received in the last few weeks, it's melting on its own, leaving the ground a mushy, slimy mess. I duck my head to hide my smile as I walk easily on Saber's armored legs. Then I realize he can't see me beneath my helmet anyway.
Tromping through the underbrush in the Mecca is easy and doesn't involve getting my feet muddy. Of course, Richard could try riding one of his pets like Lana and Makito are doing with hers, but Richard seems happier just grumbling. When we finally reach the dungeon, I marvel at the changes since my last entry. A wall of concrete and earth has been thrown up around the entrance, and a pit faces the entrance. In a snaking path to the dungeon, stone spears stick out, making sure that no monster can get a running start to their jumps. Just outside the entrance, there's a clear area to allow our dungeon parties to gather. Of course, that ground has been heavily mined. Four watchtowers are set along the wall, mostly to allow the guards to watch for incoming threats from the wilderness. Each watchtower also holds one of the four shield generators and beam cannons we've borrowed from the city defenses. The entrance is as well guarded as we can make it. If things go to hell, we'll need to rely on these defenses to save our asses. I survey the area once more before I dump the drones and signal repeaters out from my altered space for everyone else to grab. People stream in spurts over the next 15 minutes, picking up their extra gear before grabbing some last-minute rest. Lana, I murmur. She looks up at me from where she works, stroking and petting her pets. John, there's a hint of wariness in her voice. Be careful. Watch the sides and remember, your pets are there to keep you safe. For a moment, her lips tighten before she smiles and kisses my cheek. Yes, Dad. I sigh, really wishing she didn't have to come. Really, I wish none of us was here, but that's the nature of our lives now. As Richard walks up, I nod to him and murmur, watch out for her, will you? Of course. He shoots me a disdainful look and I accept it. She is, after all, his sister. You're the one up front and center. I nod then, turn away, looking over the gathered group one last time. Arrayed before me are warriors and mages, fighters and healers, my allies and enemies, because I asked them to be here, because I said it was necessary. To one side, Aiden leans against a nearby tree as he finishes throwing up. Makito rubs the older man's back in an attempt to comfort him. Jim is walking among his people, talking softly and bolstering spirits. The Yeriks squat, playing a game of stones that seems to consume their attention, but occasionally they glance at the dungeon entrance. There's a hush among the group, a stillness that makes people speak softly, as if speaking loudly would break the spell of peace and signal the start of what we all fear. I spot Jason standing next to Rachel, their hands clasped. He sees me and mouths, not a game. I nod. No, this isn't a game. And I wonder how many of these people will be dead before the day is over. As I think that, I note the new blips that have appeared on my minimap. Everyone play nice. We've got incoming friendlies. Friendlies, I repeat, hitting the external mic to ensure that everyone hears me. Don't want anyone shooting the Hakarta as they make their way to us. 25 large infantry soldiers walk through the trees. They move in formation, without thought, spread out in a way that screams organization, even to me. 6.5 feet tall at the shortest, some going up to 7, and all broad across the shoulders. Their mottled green and brown camouflaged armor blends in with the surroundings as the group stomps forward, beam rifles and plasma grenades strapped to their bodies.
John?
A hand touches armor, and strikingly intelligent eyes meet my gaze.
Sorry we're late. We had a small delay coming in.
I step forward, offering my hand to Labashi. Not at all. Surprised you're here, and with so many others. Unspoken is the part that I can't afford him or the additions.
Orcs? The Hakarta are orcs?
Jason splutters, staring at the group, and Rachel squeezes his hand to shut him up. He quiets down, though not without adding,
at least they're Uruk-hai.
My employer decided he was not interested in having an infected dungeon in his territory,
Labashi says, his eyes twinkling with amusement.
We are here at his request.
I consider that, then shake my head. Well, seems like Labashi has figured out a way to get paid twice for this job. Veer stiffens slightly at the mention of Labashi's employer, but says nothing. I really do wish someone would fill me in on the subtext here at some point. Capstan walks forward, offering Labashi his hand. As Labashi grips Capstan's arm, I see Capstan's forearm muscles bunch before his eyes tighten, Labashi never losing that smile of his.
First fist. I am Labashi Ruka, Major of the 63rd Division. I understand you are in command here.
Hand released, Capstan surreptitiously flexes his fingers as he answers,
Yes, I am. Have you read the briefing notes? Do you have any last-minute recommendations?
Labashi smiles slightly, nodding.
I might have a few.
I sigh as Veer moves forward to join the duo. Leaving the group to it, I climb the staircase to the top of the wall, surprised to find a pair of Hakarta up there already. They're releasing a series of small, spider-like drones, sending them into the entrance and the dungeon without a word. Well, this might go better than I thought. Thankfully, the discussion takes less than an hour. Whether it's the fact that Labashi knows what he's doing, or that the plans are already in place, it doesn't take long for the call to gather to come. I've sent out my drones already, though the amount of data I'm getting pales in comparison to the constant data stream the Hakarta have. Tim's speaking softly to one of the Hakarta, working to get their equipment to sync up with our signal boosters. There's a pair of Fraxen in the main passageway, and only scattered numbers farther in. Not enough to consider a threat, and it's only on closer inspection that we realize why. These are dungeon-born Fraxen that aren't infected yet. We've yet to see an infected Fraxen, which is a bit worrying. Everyone's a bit tense from the additional delay, but once we get moving, the tension ratchets up even further. A couple of Hakarta and Yerrick, Bill's raven-haired friend, and Stupid from the bar play scouts, ghosting in ahead of us to eyeball for trouble that the drones might have missed. After all that talk of not being high enough level, Jim finally relented and is bringing in a pair of his hunting group. The rest of us move as a group at first, then parties split up, heading down each of the passageways. Signal boosters are added, providing us better and better coverage, but even the boosters can only do so much. At a certain point, we're going to lose contact. As the parties leave, I hear more than one happy comment that the dungeon is both dry and warm. While higher constitutions might mean we can handle lower temperatures better, it's still not comfortable. At least, not for anyone who isn't fully covered in high-grade temperature-controlling armor. Bill, Veer, Labashi, Capstan, and me are the heavy hitters and have to hang back, ready to hammer any resistance into the ground. That leaves Nelia and Aaron underpowered, so Lana and Aiden join them while Richard and Makito get Amelia, Rachel, and Jason. Gadsby couldn't come. Carcross needed at least one of their powerhouses in town, and he drew the short straw. In the end, the heavy hitters end up strolling along behind everyone else, watching the data and feeds while the others do all the work. We never hit more than a few Fraxen at a time, and those that we do fight aren't infected. The longer this takes, the more antsy I get, and I eventually find myself chewing through chocolate bar after chocolate bar to find something to do. Labashi steals a few, though he, like the others, is focused on coordinating the search parties. Even Bill looks bored, though he mostly suffers in silence. I'm pretty sure he's just pissed that Veer dispatched a pair of guards to ensure he made it today. 4.5 hours later, we're 4 main caverns in and finally taking a break. We've got 3/4 of the groups deployed covering side passages, waiting for the scouts to clear the passageways before they move on. While we rest, drones scurry around on their automated tasks, bringing more and more details about the dungeon back to us when they get back into sensor range.
It seems the spores have pulled back,
Capstan says. He doesn't look happy, and I completely agree. We're stretched thin already, covering the passages we've found, and it's been slow going since we try to keep sufficient coverage on each split group that they're able to pull back if they encounter resistance. The fact that they all have drones and scouts ahead of them helps. Still, our experience with the Fraxen means we can't rely on that entirely. We're pretty sure by now that there are at least 3 major passages leading farther in. The Fraxen that hold up off the first branch are gone entirely, and that cavern eventually joins up with the main branch in main cavern number 3. Now we're following 1 passage from cavern 2 and another from this cavern, not including the 3rd that we've designated the main route. Each of these main passageways is so big, it'd take at least 2 groups to cover fully. Thus far, none of these passageways have shown to meet up, so we're stuck waiting for the drones to give us an idea of what it is we're looking for, while hoping they aren't completely destroyed.
Yes,
Labashi says.
Fall back to Cavern 2?
Yes,
Capstan answers. I sigh. Pushing ahead to this cavern was always a risk, since we haven't explored all the corridors fully, but it was a risk we were willing to take to see if we could find the Fraxen faster. However, now that we've pretty much confirmed that we've got multiple main passageways, pushing ahead means leaving more area to guard. It's better to back off and finish checking the first branch fully before we do anything else. Once we've dropped a few drones, we pull back and get back to waiting. For all the dreams of a slam-bang, balls-to-the-walls fight, all that has happened is a tense, slow, grinding wait. Bored. I find myself next to Bill as we wait for something, anything, to happen. I look the man over before I finally decide to say something. You're a bit of a dick, aren't you?
Are you trying to start a fight?
Bill says, glaring at me. Capstan shoots me a glare too, and I raise my hand in surrender. Sorry. Let's try that again. You're not much of a team player, are you?
I'm a very good team player. I'm just more selective about my team than some people,
Bill states and turns to face me. I grunt at his reply. Fine. Fine. So, Enforcer, eh? Interesting class.
How?
Bill's lips thin and I smile at him. He shrugs, answering the unasked question.
I was a bouncer before all this. I guess the system thought this was appropriate.
Yeah, I reply, not really meaning anything by it. I cudgel my brain for something else to say to fill the time, but I find nothing. Bill snorts, shaking his head, and turns from me. I sigh. Fine. I guess we really don't have much to say to one another. Should we be thinking about calling it a day? I wonder, staring at the glowing icons that make up our people in my map. It's been another 4 hours, and we're once again spread out across a wide distance. The Hakarta have reported losing over a quarter of their drones so far. We occasionally find the drones on the ground, shorted out from mana overload or destroyed by the Fraxen or one of the few other smaller monsters that have begun to spawn in the absence of the spore-dominated ecosystem. After finding an extremely narrow single-person corridor at the end of the second passageway in the first cavern, the First Fist decided to post a party and have us move forward with the search. Now, the majority of us are sitting in the fourth cavern with search parties headed down both passageways in an attempt to locate the Fraxen. Hours of being on edge, of waiting for the other shoe to drop, has made almost everyone tired. Only Capstan, Veer, Labashi, and I seem to be functioning at full capacity, probably due to our high mental resistances and willpower. Everyone else is moving just a little slower. As Capstan opens his mouth to answer me, a cackle comes through our communicators.
Fraxen! We have Fraxen!
We don't need to ask who it is, though of course Labashi does with a slight growl. Since one party is filled with Yerrik and humans, and the other, the professional Hakarta, the unprofessional report of trouble can only come from the humans. I want to go. I want to fight, but Capstan shakes his head as he sees me edge toward the passageway. He stands there, arms crossed, waiting for more information to come in. No surprise that more details come from his people.
50 Fraxen, hidden in a side cavern that the drones missed. We have them contained, First Fist. No aid required.
I find myself relaxing. Bill smirks, returning to the game of solitaire he's been playing for hours. Capstan asks for a little more information, but with things in hand, I find my mind drifting. I'm not entirely sure what the Spore's game plan is, but the fact that it's taken us nearly a whole day to make any form of substantial contact makes me lean towards Scenario 3. Not good. Not good at all. The battle doesn't take that long, probably only 5 minutes before it's all over. When the report comes in, we confirmed it's infected Fraxen, but nothing of unusual size. They do note that these aren't the plasma-wielding Fraxen I fought before. These released caustic clouds of acid that ate through and damaged armor.
Luckily, the mages were able to keep the gas mostly contained, so it was only the melee fighters who suffered. The side cavern dealt with, the group continues to search for trouble, obviously invigorated by the encounter. I wish I could say the same for us, stuck waiting as we are. Capstan stands there, looking at the ceiling and presumably his system information. Coming to a decision, Capstan lowers that horned head of his and speaks into our communicators.
Pull back. Leave sensors. We're stopping for the night.
There's a rustle from those around us, but the professionals take action immediately. Even the humans don't actually object to packing it in. While we might not have been doing this for as long as the others, we've learnt a few lessons in the apocalypse. Later that evening, I'm sitting next to Richard and Makito, resting against the comfortable bulk of a puppy as I eat our rehydrated dinners. Not the tastiest form of sustenance, but I'll take it over the green goo that the Hakarta are busy squeezing out of their tubes. I guess ready meals the galaxy over just aren't particularly tasty. Or I could be wrong and the green goo is a cultural delicacy. Certainly the Hakarta are taking to their meals with gusto. The Yarrick in their own groups have set up small frying pans and are busy lightly frying up various vegetables, some recognizable and others significantly less so. Coming from a Chinese family, I've eaten a wider variety of foodstuffs than most, but even I draw the line at lurid, neon-purple seaweed-like vegetables. Not what I was expecting, Richard says, gesturing around the group. We've got mana lights set up all around us, illuminating the bare cavern, while shield generators and sensors cover all our entrances and the areas we've cleared. No reason to let the monsters sneak in on us while we're resting.
What? Camping in the middle of a dungeon and waiting for a swarm of monsters to fall on you not your liking? Jason says sarcastically.
Rachel snuggles between his legs. Rachel playfully smacks his arm, and I smile slightly at the two teenagers, glad they found something good among all this.
Don't forget eating with orcs and minotaurs,
Aiden adds dryly. Makito smiles slightly at the banter, though she stays silent, working through a series of bento boxes of food. She gets more than a few longing stares at her packed dinners. For a moment, I wonder if it's a good thing that she's spending time doing more mundane things rather than constantly training or hunting monsters. Once again, I wish I had a real psychotherapist on hand. It'd be nice to have someone trained to ask about how my friends are handling the stresses of the apocalypse, whether Makito's getting better or just about to jump off the cliff. We could use the shop. But the problem with system-purchased information, it was information, not actual skill. For that matter, while a few skills are purchasable, they're all generic. I'm not entirely sure training to deal with Hakarta or an AI or whatever Zev's race is will translate to human psychology. Then again, I might be overthinking things. Trauma is trauma, right? Certainly the psychotherapy that Richard was taking worked. Is taking? Coming back from watch, Lana flops down next to me, stretching out her long legs and prodding at the armored carapace of Saber. How can you stand sitting in that? Surprisingly comfortable, actually. I've slept in it before when I've been in the wild. Makes it hard for monsters to chomp on you. She shakes her head.
Give.
Lana holds out her hand and I frown.
Chocolates.
You know, you could buy your own, I grumble, handing her some. Floating above me, Ollie makes a whipping motion with his hand while I roll my eyes at him. A moment later, I'm dispensing chocolate all around to expectant hands. Lucky for me, I buy a ton. Labashi, noting what I'm doing, wanders over and holds out his giant green hand. You too? I ask.
Consider it part payment.
Labashi grins. I sigh, pulling out some of the Belgian chocolates he likes and passing it over. He gestures to a spot next to me and I nod, watching as the others scramble away a bit. Well, everyone but Jason, who is staring openly at the Hakarta.
You did well out there,
Labashi says, nodding to my group. A few people looked startled, then happy at his compliment.
It's impressive, considering how long the system has been in effect.
I nod slightly, but it's Richard who speaks.
So I heard you mention your employer. Who is he?
You do not expect me to actually answer that, do you?
Labashi says. Richard looks disappointed.
Her Grace Uli Kangana, Duchess of the Polkoi States, Veer says, having come up to join the group. He eyes everyone eating the chocolates, but makes no request for any. She also currently owns and controls both the village of Fairbanks and the town of Anchorage.
Seeing my brow furrow, Lana leans over and whispers, Whitehorse is still a village in the system's eyes.
I nod dumbly while Ali concentrates, staring into the distance. In a few seconds, I see a notification that I've got system windows waiting for me. At a guess, details about the Duchess. I wonder how bad the translations are of her titles. Something else to dig into at some point.
Really?
Aiden frowns, rubbing his nose.
Are infected dungeons that dangerous?
Yes.
Labashi nods.
A normal spore infection is limited. The numbers forced to slowly grow. A dungeon gives the spores a chance to continuously reproduce and grow. And on a dungeon world, it would be a simple matter to infect even more dungeons. It is much easier to deal with earlier than later.
Veer nods, letting his body relax as he stands there, watching the group. I hear Jason ask another question about the Hakarta, which I find myself ignoring. I've always wondered why the Hakarta were checking us out, and while this sheds some light, it's not a lot. As much as the explanation by Labashi makes some sense, I still don't believe that an infected dungeon could spread that fast to make it a threat to Fairbanks anytime soon. Certainly not before the system stabilizes and adventurers start pouring in. If I'm right, it means that she's got plans much closer to the dungeon. Veer meets my unfocused gaze and nods once, as if confirming my guesses. Great. We just settled city politics, and now we've got galactic politics to deal with. Somehow, I don't think shouting at them and threatening them with body odor will work as well. Capstan walks up, grumbling at the group and sending us to bed down before the start of our shifts. The Eric is right. We best get some rest. As it stands, we'll probably have a pretty nasty fight soon.
Chapter 21.
Contact!
The word comes over the communicators, jerking us straight. Finally. We spread out across three different openings and down a side route. They finally come into contact again.
They haven't seen the drone,
Aaron says, watching the feed. Ali has slaved a status screen to the drone, so I watch the hundreds of the Fraxen packed into the cavern. Strangely, they aren't all staying still like before. Instead, some are skittering around in aimless circles. Occasionally, a Fraxen nears the entrance before it jerks to a stop and returns to its aimless movements.
Going deeper?
Aaron says as he controls the drone. Behind, barely a few hundred meters back, the teams that have been tasked to clear this passageway have stopped, waiting further orders. Capstan stares at the information coming in before he turns to Labashi.
Send two of your parties to reinforce. We'll hold here.
Labashi nods, barking out orders. His men split off and trot toward the opening at speed. I grit my teeth, frustrated at being forced to wait again.
Incoming, boyo,
Ali says, flashing my screen for me, and I frown. Everyone hears and turns, scanning their own screens, as a lone Fraxen trots down the main passageway toward us. It walks right past the drone without seeing, its movements erratic. Kill it? I ask, gesturing down the way. Easy pickings.
This feels wrong,
Labashi says, eyes narrowed.
It's infected.
Yeah?
It's a scout,
Labashi clarifies for those of us who aren't following him. Capstan nods and sends a Yerrik to deal with the scout far from our position.
More contacts,
Ali reports, eyes narrowing as he sifts through the scattered data. We've got sensors placed out even farther than the drones, but they aren't giving particularly good data, not with the amount of mana interference we're getting this deep into the dungeon.
A lot more.
Fall in,
Capstan barks. I walk forward to squat behind my assigned wall. Minor changes to the cavern have given us a raised stone wall that should slow down the Fraxen. For a quarter second, maybe. On the other hand, a quarter second at the speeds we fight can be a long time. Bill joins me on my right and I glance over. I note he's a left-hander, so I shuffle to the left a bit more to give us more space. Not that he's using a melee weapon yet, instead hefting a pair of modified futuristic beam pistols. Ali floats over to my left and just above my head, barely within my line of sight as he continues to stare at the screens.
Drones broken into the second cavern. More Fraxen, he frowns. Feed's getting pretty jumpy. I don't think we'll get a proper count there.
I nod, hefting my beam rifle as I watch the incoming dots on my minimap. Now that they're closer, the drone is picking them up on visual, too, their lines staggered and jerky. The Fraxen move forward, then, occasionally, one or another Fraxen will stop or turn around. They aren't the imposing wall of flesh that we encountered the last time.
Looks like your virus is working, Bill says, watching the feed as well.
I nod and shoot a glance at the man, wondering how much I can trust him. There's no real way to fake levels, so he's obviously got some skills. Doesn't mean he won't break if things get too hectic.
They're moving,
Capstan growls, his eyes locked on the screens. I glance back. Veer and Labashi are standing next to the command group, heads turning slightly as they watch the feeds before they nod. A quick glance is all I need to confirm it. The Fraxen on the other feeds are moving, heading straight for Lana and Richard. I grit my teeth, knowing Makito has their back. All I can do is trust.
You might want to focus here,
Bill chides me, opening fire now that the Fraxen are within range. His shots go into the darkness, but I hear flesh sizzling as beam weaponry punches through Fraxen bodies. Those pistols are impressive. My turn. I open fire, a second slower than everyone else on the front line, at the targets highlighted in my vision. A veritable rainbow of beam weaponry lights up the cavern, mixed with fast-moving projectiles that smash into the monsters before us, turning the monsters into so much slurry. We probably waste half our shots on already dead creatures.
Who told you to shoot?
Snaps Veer, striding up and shaking his head.
Wait until the order is given.
Shooting stops, more than a few of us looking sheepish. Veer just watches as the Fraxen close the distance. When they're 100 meters from us, he finally gives the order to resume shooting, staggering our fire so we don't waste our ammunition. As I thought, the pistols Bill uses are special, upgraded up the wazoo by the shop and then possibly augmented by skills. Each of his shots does a significant chunk of damage, burning through Fraxen defenses with ease. The rest of us don't have such spectacular results, but the sheer volume of fire and the lack of cohesion in their charge is enough to make this a cakewalk. At least until we start running out of ammunition. I see the flickering numbers as my mana battery runs down, my remaining shots dropping at a precipitous rate. Bill slows down his shooting too, and I see others along the line slap in new batteries. The gap in fire is small, the slowdown even smaller, but suddenly, the Fraxen aren't being held, but are inching forward. Second by second, the line creeps forward, each new corpse a few feet closer to us.
Hold!
The ending is ragged. A few last shots sent out after the command is given, but we eventually all stop shooting. The Fraxen don't react much to the sudden cessation of fire. Not until a few seconds have passed, then they're suddenly sprinting to us. I see a few hasty shots as hunters react to the danger, but I hold my fire, knowing what comes next.
Ice spells,
Veer commands. Elemental spells fly over our heads, targeting the charging Fraxen. Blizzard winds howl, dropping the temperature and coating monsters in snow and ice. Bolts of absolute zero impact carapaces, turning them into popsicles that break apart under their own momentum. Small motes of white dust float forward, landing on monsters and freezing them. Spears of ice pin Fraxen to the ground or tear off limbs as they fly by us. All those spells and more rain down on the creatures at Veer's command.
Fire!
Veer commands, and the mages switch. Previously frozen creatures are heated up as walls of flame erupt from the ground. Pellets of plasma fall from the cavern ceiling to smash into the monsters. Traditional fireballs are thrown, exploding in expanding spheres of superheated air. Whips of fire burst forth from the ground, catching Fraxen and tearing through frozen shells. The chittering screams from the Fraxen are drowned out in the roar of flames.
This is easy. Bill smirks, and I almost hit him.
These are the basic Fraxen, idiot, Ali says. Plasma Fraxen coming in next.
Hold! Front line! Get ready for incoming fire, Veer says.
I hear Veer step back. A quick glance shows that the mages are hunkered down beneath their own stone wall with additional coverage from portable shield generators. Plasma Fraxen push past normal Fraxen, who refuse to enter the superheated passageway, closing on our line again. They totter over burning corpses, the bladed tips of their feet striking the ground as they rush forward. Behind me, Veer finally gives the command.
Evens fire!
The Plasma Fraxen are dangerous, but they've got a shorter range than we do. We blow them up in the passageway, attempting to pile the bodies up to create an impromptu barrier from their corpses. The occasional extra fast or extra tough Fraxen gets a bolt of plasma out before it's cut down, but a single bolt is nothing to the frontliners. I even have time to glance at the drone feed from the other battle, enough time to tell that they're doing as well as we are. Things are going too easy. Way too easy. Ali?
I'm looking, boyo, I'm looking,
Ali replies, flicking his hands across his screens. A quick glance tells me he's not the only one looking for the catch. The Fraxen stagger in at longer intervals, individual Fraxen rather than the unorganized swarm. Veer designates shooters while the rest of us rest, checking over our ammunition. The short fight burnt through half of my mana batteries, and I wonder how everyone else is doing. On the other hand, we probably stacked up over 100 Fraxen, right? It's not as if the spores have shown extremely diverse tactics so far. Perhaps, just perhaps, all they're doing is trying to win a battle of attrition. For a moment, I let myself hope. A snarl from Capstan gets my attention.
They're behind us,
Ali says, and I jerk my head up. He twitches a finger, and I see the drone feed from behind us, showing the rushing monsters.
How? Bill says. We checked everything. There's no way they're back there. No idea,
Ali replies, shaking his head. Capstan is already calling out orders, splitting the teams to reinforce the back while the rest of us stay. They really like their pincer attacks, I grumble, and Ali nods. In a moment, we don't have time to talk as the Fraxen launch themselves at our defenses again. I find myself smiling grimly as I open fire. Tracking monsters and killing them has become so routine, I barely need to think about it. If the spores think a simple pincer attack is enough to finish us, they're wrong. The smell of ionized air, burnt flesh, and the excretions of the Fraxen as they die clogs the air, and I mentally command the helmet to filter it all out. There's little I can do for the clatter of pincers on the ground and the screams of the Fraxen as they die. We pile them up so high that the Fraxen have to take time to pull down and shift bodies before they can come at us again. Veer switches the attacks around more often, using the mages to hit the Fraxen so we can husband our ammunition. Unlike many of the other frontline fighters, I'm carrying fewer mana batteries, so I find myself switching over to throwing magic rather than shooting. I get a few raised eyebrows, but I've got the mana to do so, and I make sure not to let it drop below 80%. This is a marathon, not a sprint, especially with the numbers we've seen so far. We hammer away at the Fraxen. Plasma and normal Fraxen are the majority, with the occasional acid spitter, of the variations so far. It's a constant barrage of damage and spells, broken up only by Veer calling a rotation, or when the bodies pile up so high that the Fraxen have to pull them apart to continue their attack. In time, the drone feeding us information on our attackers stops sending us information, leaving us in the dark once again. As the Fraxen pull aside the next wall of bodies, I catch a glimpse of something new, a virulent purple, and I narrow my eyes, trying to spot it again. I only get a second before a new attack comes. Blobs of barely held together purple sacks thrown from behind the wall of corpses. As they impact, the sacks split open. A greenish-purple liquid spills onto the ground and releases vapors. All around me, the humans begin choking and covering their faces. Bill slaps a hand outward, calling forth a gas mask, as do other humans. The fully armored Hakarta are safe in their suits and continue to fire. The Yarrick just growls softly, fighting through the fumes without slacking off. Even as gas masks protect against the primary effects, the secondary effects kick in, attacking any exposed body parts. The distraction is enough to make even the Yarrick pause as they get proper armor on. The drop in fire means the Fraxen surge ahead. I snarl, opening fire on full auto with Saber's projectile rifle, taking up the slack. Black lightning and fireballs surge past my head as mages behind me lend a hand.
Out of the corner of my eye, I see a hunter pop up, helmet down and gloves on, to receive a sack straight in the face. It splits on top of him, covering his entire body. I see the liquid eat away at his armor, even as Veer grabs his body and tosses him into the back lines. The combined fire of